We have got a ton of places to go with Chris Johnston, our NHL insider, who joins us Thursdays here on the program, from key dates to coaching hires and a whole lot more. Let's say hello to CJ right now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. I guess CJ, to kick it off, let's start with where we are right now, Thursday, July 9th. What part of the process are we in today as the NHL continues to finalize their return to action?
Well, I would say, Pat, that we're on the precipice of a major moment. You know, I mean, tomorrow is a day that we fully expect that once the players are done voting on the ratification of the CBA and the return to play package, and the NHL Board of Governors do the same, that, you know, we're going to get some sort of official announcement that the league intends to proceed and have training camps and attempt to play games. And obviously, be putting into action this CBA that takes us through September 2026. And so, well, it's not a surprise because, you know, we've spoken about these issues for some time and, you know, knew that they were at the edge of this. I mean, I think that's a huge moment. And then on top of that, I think the reality also has to come into play. And that's, you know, how can the league navigate these next 18 or so days to get from where we are today to when, you know, you would have teams traveling to the hub cities, and how do you get through the inevitable slew of positive tests, which, you know, I'm told have already started, you know, with more and more teams now testing players that have gotten back here in the last few days. You know, there's going to be, I guess, a couple tough parts of that. I mean, the good news is you've got the CBA, you've got the return to play, everything's full steam ahead. And then the second part of that is that there's just going to be a bunch of positive tests here in the near future, because, you know, we've had half the league to this point that really hasn't been part of the testing protocol that's now doing so. And those results are coming in.
So in that respect, What are, I guess, the biggest hurdles, as you talked about, in the next 18 days? What are the massive hurdles and the things that the NHL are going to have to clear to ensure this happens?
Well, you don't want outbreaks, and you certainly want to limit any outbreaks that happen. I mean, we've seen with Major League Soccer starting up here this week that two teams have had to be pulled right out of the tournament, the team from Dallas and Nashville, because they had, you know, 9 and 10 players, respectively, produce positive tests, and then they weren't able to basically field a team. I mean, that's the worst case scenario. I think, you know, for the NHL, you know, especially with 18 of the teams that are returning being based in the United States, and some of them in places, you know, like Florida, you know, with the Panthers and the Lightning, or Arizona, like the Coyotes, you know, Texas, like the Stars. I mean, in those markets, there's just a huge surge in the last 2 weeks, you know, in the spread of the coronavirus. And so, you know, I would say that those teams are more at risk of having that kind of outbreak. You know, it only takes one player or staff member or someone serving food at training camp to potentially become a spreader that you know, has a similar outcome. And as we get closer to the season, obviously there's huge there's a huge imperative not to have that happen, because, mm-hmm. you know, if you get positive tests, there's a protocol in place that requires the players, you know, not to be skating, not to be exercising, to be isolating, and then you have to produce at least 2 negative tests after a positive before you can be let back in. I mean, the closer you get to competition, the less you can have players have to serve those kind of conditions, because obviously then they're not available for the restart of the season. So, you know, it's not even to say anyone's done anything wrong here. It's just, this is the key moment where, you know, you really have to, you know, be vigilant. I think that the message certainly is being passed around to players already, in terms of just limiting what you do. I mean, already as part of this, if you want someone from the team to do your groceries for you, you don't even have to basically go anywhere but your house and you know, the training facility. And, you know, that's what it's going to take to I think try to make this as safe as possible. And yep. So, you know, I think these 18 days will be big, because yes, we're going to get camps opening, and we'll start to focus the discussion on how does this team match up against that team, and which players are going to play on which line, or which goalie is going to start, you know, the typical hockey talk. But, you know, underlining all that will be, can everyone stay healthy and not produce positive results that force either teams to be taken out of this or make the league have to make a very difficult decision.
So just in terms of the immediate next steps and kind of the immediate timeline here we are on Thursday. Tomorrow seems like a pretty significant day. What are the immediate next steps and kind of the process this is going to go in the next 24, 48 hours?
Well, we're looking at a sprint. I mean, if it gets ratified tomorrow, as I expect to happen, you know, you get the ratification. That's everything's official. You know, training camps are scheduled to open on Monday. You know, I think we're in somewhere in that window between call it, you know, it's not going to come tomorrow, but in 48 to 72, you know, in 2 or 3, 4 days, we're going to get the schedule announced. And then you're going to have players back on the ice and teams skating together. And it's pretty quick. I mean, with camps opening July 13th, you know, teams are scheduled to travel. If there's no delays or there's no complications, to the hub cities on June 26th. I mean, it's less than 2 weeks. And then once they get to the hub city, you're into an exhibition game and you're into, you know, starting the season up again by August 1st. It, you know, there's a lot after so many weeks and months of not a whole lot happening too quickly. Everything's going to be a sprint if this goes ahead in the right way. And if the league's able to get through this next period, I think it's not a foregone conclusion. It can happen. I think the NHL has done everything it can possibly do to make it happen. Quite frankly, I think they've done a great job of getting to a point where this is now a conversation and this is a possibility. But, you know, this you know, next couple of days will be kind of crazy because we're now, we're going sort of from like, this might happen to, all right, now we have a season, we have a schedule, you know, teams are on the ice Monday and back into training camps and preparing, you know, to start up, whether it's qualifying round playoff series or for the top teams that are in that round robin format. But I mean, this is going to become very real here. I would say, you know, really from the announcement tomorrow that the CBA has been ratified and the return to play is going to move forward.
We're talking with Chris Johnston, our NHL insider, joins us Tuesdays and Thursdays here on the program. Do you get the idea when talking specifically about the extension of the CBA and some of the changes, some of the things that have been worked into that extension, do you get the sense that players are pretty happy with some of the rewards they're getting or some of the concessions that are being given to them in this extension?
I think it's a mixed bag. And look, it's almost human nature. You almost listen more to someone who wants to complain sometimes, because there definitely are complaints out there. You know, I'm not going to try to sell this as this is a universal victory and everybody's pumped and they can't wait to, you know, there's been a rush to the ballots to vote yes. But, you know, I think by and large, most players or player agents, you know, people advising the players understand that, you know, having this kind of security for the business, you know, sort of stabilizing things at a time when, let's face it, financially, as the industry as a whole is in a very tough spot still. You know, we don't know when we can sell tickets. At least 100% of the tickets to each game is going to happen. I mean, I think it's fair to say it's not happening at the start of next season in December or January, whenever that is. But will that happen by the end of next season or the season beyond that? And so there's clearly some larger scale challenges here that the business is going to have to face. And so I think that there's a lot of value in having this kind of agreement. I mean, it's 6 seasons after this one at minimum that this runs. And so I think most people see this as a fair deal. You know, I think the players got some clear, I mean, wins is maybe a tough, this isn't a win-loss scenario. I think everyone's losing because of the pandemic, if that makes sense. I think where this works out for the players is that, you know, they're sharing some pain with the owners in the early days in terms of getting through this immediate, you know, tough financial time. They're going to get to a point where the cap on the amount of money that's taken out of their check is no more than 6% during the CBA by the end of it. Meaning if you sign a $10 million contract, you know, at most they're only taking $600,000, which is still a lot of money, but it's not as much as certainly what's happened in the last 10 years and what's happening right now. And, you know, you're going back to the Olympics. You know, I don't think that there's too many clamps here on things players would value. So there's definitely some individual concerns. There's definitely players out there that feel they could have done better, or this was the time to go for more. But I think objectively, this is a pretty fair deal. And you know, the players need, you know, half of the players plus one to vote for this. I don't think there's any doubt at all. Okay. They're going to get that. You know, it's been said to me, you expect something like 75-25 or 80-20. There's going to be some opposition there, but more players than not, and then some and then some, I think are in favor of this, and you know, and I have no reason to think the owners are viewing it any differently. So, no, this is in a lot of ways, it's a great moment for the NHL in tough times. I mean, this was not a CBA that was easy to negotiate for a whole bunch of reasons. And for the first time since I've certainly been a journalist, and actually since I've been an adult, everybody in the room, I think, acted like adults and found a way to get something done here that is sensible for the industry and is going to serve the league well over a period of time, where they're going to still go through, you know, a rocky stretch until we get on the other side of this pandemic.
Yeah, and no doubt about that. And it's almost hard to wrap your head around that's where the NHL and the PA found themselves, knowing how much labor discourse there's been in the last number of decades. I'm completely with you there. So back to the return to play and kind of the timelines from there and beyond. How you put this out on Twitter today, like when we start taking a look at the critical dates and the ideal dates that the NHL has set in place here, we also have a pretty good idea of how quick the timeline is for this return to play and to start from the qualifying round to hand out the Stanley Cup. Like it's going to go quick.
It is. I mean, you're looking at a hair more than 2 months. If from the day that the first game's played, if we go to game 7 of the Cup final, and you know, you're looking at that normally for 4 rounds, but we've added 10 days at the start of this where it's almost like a fifth round. I mean, some teams are playing round robin games. Obviously you got 16 teams playing those best of 5 qualifying series, but that's going to take 10 days in itself, and then you're squeezing what normally happens in 2 months into 50 days. You know, it's going to require some degree of back-to-backs. I don't think there'll be a ton for any given team, but there's going to be some teams that play back-to-backs in this playoffs based on the timeline laid out. I mean, there's some other interesting things. You know, for example, the first buyout window opens the day of the Cup final. You know, meaning that normally that happens, I believe the language previously was 48 hours after the end of the Cup or June 15th, whichever comes first. But normally that's something that wouldn't happen until you were officially in the off season. Well, in a shorter off season and a condensed schedule, you know, we're going to have a buyout window open while the Stanley Cup's still happening. I mean, that's the kind of thing we're getting used to. I mean, even if this ends up in, you know, what was included in the memorandum of understanding that's been agreed to, it's still tentative. You know, it's not locked in stone, but it also said the final day for the Cup could be October 2nd and the draft could be October 6th. Well, you know, that's a really quick turnaround. I mean, we've seen it a week apart, specifically back in 2013 after the 12-13 lockout when we had some compression in the schedule. But we've never seen anything like this if it goes ahead as it's come through. You know, let's all hope that happens. It means, A, that I think the health and safety went well during this restart and that everyone was able to execute this in the way they think possible. But it's a very aggressive timetable between what's expected of these playoff series, where, again, you'll see back-to-back games, which don't happen too much during the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I know there's been some individual instances where there's building issues or whatever, where it has happened. There's been a couple of times I've covered series that had back-to-backs. But in general, you don't see that often during the playoffs. And if anything, you see sometimes 2 days between games. I mean, we're not getting any of that in this playoffs. This is going to be played as absolutely quickly as you can. Obviously, it's a little easier to do so when you don't have the travel you normally would and everyone's in the hub cities. And then the offseason is going to start, in fact, during the playoffs, because that's the only way to make this happen. You know, the league is trying to play 82 games next year, too. So, you know, it was pretty interesting to see that critical dates calendar, because it was even, I mean, I knew it was going to be aggressive. I knew it was going to be expedited, but it was probably even more so than I was expecting.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because for the longest time we've kind of been working under the okay summertime and early fall for when this season finally comes to an end, and then January has kind of been the thought as to when the next season starts. And now ideally, and we don't know if it's going to happen or not, but they're looking at a December 1st start. So that did catch you a little off guard, hey?
It did, and I think it's a bit ambitious, frankly. I mean, it's sort of like how you might say to someone, I'm going to pay my house off in 2028, but you know, it might be 2030 before it actually happens. I mean, I think that if everything goes absolutely perfect and there's no issues and maybe a few series end early, maybe December 1st is the start of the next season. Probably more realistic is you see a bit of adjustment on those dates. I mean, the way we already have, you know, at one point, tomorrow was going to be the start of camp, July 10th. You know, for a few weeks, that was the idea. It had to be pushed to July 13th on Monday just because it took a little longer to get through things. I think that's what we're going to see happen with this critical dates schedule that was included in the memorandum of understanding, is that it's a really good rough outline. It tells us approximately when everything's going to happen. But if next season starts December 7th instead of December 1st, I don't think we should be surprised. And, you know, that extra week will be important, especially if you're a team that plays all the way to the final, for example, and you know, has to go through this grueling schedule. And if it ends up that the offseason is stretched out just a little bit more than they're planning, today on paper. I think in reality that won't be the worst outcome. So, you know, we've never seen this. We've basically just had an off season in terms of the amount of time off, you know, since March 12th when the season was paused to, you know, the hopeful opening of training camps on Monday. And as a result, this is sort of a new reality we have to put our head around, but I don't think it will probably be quite as expedited as is on the paper there. I think we should expect that there'll be a lot of those dates will be pushed back at least by a couple days as we get going through this.
Have you, even knowing that, have you thought about the, just from a news perspective, what a free agency draft buyout calendar would look like in that compressed amount? That might be, like, in terms of your phone and your Twitter account, that might be the busiest it'll ever be.
Well, and if I'm being objectively honest, the way I was looking at it is like, when can I take time off again? Because it hasn't really happened yet. And I was thinking, oh, I'll have November off. Well, that's not going to be the case. But yeah, it's going to be crazy. I think it's going to be great for the industry, though, too. And you know, I'm so hopeful. You know, I think this playoff tournament will be cool. I think the off season, because player movement tends to really fuel the discussion around a sport, you know, whether it's on this medium when we're talking on our chats twice a week, or obviously in the written form, but even just, I think people watching, I mean, people want to see that. And we're definitely going to have that kind of off season where I think there's a lot of player movement, and it's all going to sort of happen now on a compressed schedule, because that's what the world's handed the league. So, you know, it's going to be weird. I probably haven't really thought as much about it as I should. living a little bit more day to day, if I'm being honest, during this time than normal, and not planning everything out. But you know, I just hope everything keeps moving in the right direction, and when we get to that time, because I really think it will be, you know, we could almost see a golden age for sports in general, but definitely for the NHL in terms of the level of interest that happens if this all sort of goes to plan.
Couple more with Chris Johnston, our NHL insider. I did want to ask one thing which kind of came to light yesterday, which was somewhat interesting, and that is the league doing away with that free agency courting period that we had gotten used to in recent years. How come? What was the motivation behind that and saying goodbye to that?
That was a weird one. I think they didn't like that everything was done ahead of time. But, you know, I can tell you even today, because, you know, some GMs, it was only today that the memorandum of understanding was submitted to the teams from the league. So even though some of this has been leaked out by those of us in the media, you know, the teams themselves hadn't actually seen this officially till today. And a few teams were caught off guard by that.
Okay.
And, you know, I think largely they you know, originally it was put in because the feeling was there was tampering happening anyway. It was sort of a wink, wink. Do you need a left shot winger to play in your top six who might cost, you know, 5 years times $6 million? Yes. You know, if an agent makes that call to a GM and the GM knows who the agent's, you know, client list is and can sort of fill in the gaps. And so the idea was, okay, we're going to make this a little bit more out in the open. Players can go visit cities, as we've seen a number of free agents do in the last few years. And I think ultimately the league just didn't like the idea of it, the optics of it, the fact that it comes to July 1st and everyone already knows who's signed, and it's almost too orderly. So, you know, I don't know where I should do more digging. I don't know who initiated that, because I don't feel like that window favored players or teams any more than one or the other. I can understand in this specific season why you couldn't do that, because everything is happening on such a quicker basis, but you know, the way it's worded is that it's out for the entire CBA. So, you know, I think it's going to make a little bit more entertaining the free agent day, because so much of this is going to be not reported ahead of time, and it'll go back to the Wild West. And, you know, I've certainly talked to a few players over the years that literally got a call at 12:15 Eastern time, say, and they had to choose between three teams, and they had an hour to make a decision. And you know, it's a huge decision for your life. You know, we're going back to that time, I think. And obviously there'll be some wink, wink under the table stuff, but yeah. But I think also, you know, it's not all going to be quite as organized. Whereas, you know, if I'm being honest with you, a lot of the last June 30th, I kind of had an idea where the big names were going. Maybe not, I didn't know exactly all the money and everything, but you know, it was almost like musical chairs. Especially we take goaltenders, for example. There's only so many teams ever in the market for a goaltender in free agency, and there's only so many goaltenders that would be in that market. You could always sort of figure out how things were going to go, but I think this introduces a little bit more chaos to the process. I think it's actually better for players. It's going to be more stressful for them. But I think, you know, the odds of getting overpaid go up a little bit in that kind of environment.
And finally, just your reaction to the news out of New Jersey yesterday. Lindy Ruff, head coach, and Tom Fitzgerald, no longer interim general manager. He is now the full-time general manager.
Yeah, I would call that a mild surprise. I think the fact that the Devils had so many conversations with other candidates about coming in as the GM, you know, that didn't bode well for Tom Fitzgerald. I mean, Tom was there working under Ray Shiro for a number of years. Obviously, he was their interim general manager when Ray got fired this season. And, you know, they brought in everyone from Mike Gillis, Mike Fiuta, Lawrence Gilman, you know, a few other candidates had discussions for that job. And so the fact that he ended up getting it, I mean, good on him. But, you know, that's probably not the most comfortable position. I don't think he's been in the last few months when they were interviewing other people to potentially take his job. You know, once you have him as the candidate, though, I think Lindy Ruff makes a ton of sense. In that, you know, this is someone who's had a lot of success as an NHL coach. I've seen people sort of doing the eye roll emojis on Twitter that it's a recycled hockey guy. But I mean, he does have a pretty strong proven track record. It's someone that Tom Fitzgerald knows well. And I can kind of understand how he arrives there on that decision. But, you know, the Devils are going to be a team to watch. Their ownership is far more involved in these kind of decisions than some teams. You know, some teams, the ownership hands off to whatever you want to call it, whether it's the president of hockey operations or the GM himself, but they sort of trust that person to make all these decisions. I mean, the Devils are going for more of a collaborative process. And, you know, I think Tom did a good job. It should be noted after Ray Shiro was fired with some of the trades he made at the deadline. I think the Devils have restocked themselves and they're in a good position as a rebuilding team to be on the rise. And so he's earned himself another look, and he's trusted a coach that he knows well. You know, that's kind of how things go in this league. And so I was a bit surprised that he managed to hold on to the job when five or six other people interviewed for it, but maybe that says something about his own credentials. And I do think that organization has some better days ahead here in the future.
Great stuff as always, CJ. We'll talk again next week. Thank you, pal.
All right, Pat. All the best, pal.